This class is a different kind of class. There's no philosophy in this class, okay? If you want that, you can come on Tuesdays and Thursdays and Friday. It's just a class about how to do your daily practice, you know, what to do on a daily basis for your own private spiritual life, you know, think how to generally structure it and how to practice it. And it's going to be repetitive. We'll probably do the same thing every week. And that's the key of a daily practice, is that you do it every day. I think if you had to say the most important part of a daily practice, it's to do it every day. And it doesn't matter so much how long it is, as long as you do it every day. So I think the thing about a daily practice is that it should be daily. Buddhism is like aerobics. Or jogging, or, you know, it doesn't work if you do it like twice a week or something. And you don't make any progress if you do it just like twice a week. Also, there's right ways to do it and wrong ways to do it. And there's also a very important warm-up for your daily practice. So we're going to go through the daily practice, and especially according to Buddhist scripture, it's very important to know the warm-ups. If you don't know how to do the preparation for a meditation, then probably you won't be able to meditate well. And I think a lot of Americans who try to meditate, they fail because they don't know how to do the preparation, or I call it the warm-up. So we're going to spend some time on that. I'm not going to do anything special except to go through a normal daily practice that anybody would do if they were trained in a Tibetan monastery, okay? This is what, this is the training you get in a monastery from your, what's called your Khamsin Gyergen. You have your, in the monastery you have your scripture teacher who takes you through 18 years of scriptural study, and there may be four or five of them depending on their specialty. And then there's something like a Chigi, Lopan or something would be big lamas who come, like the Dalai Lama or the Dalai Lama's teachers who come to the monastery and teach. They come maybe once a year in the winter, and they'll spend a month there and they'll teach a whole subject. And then there's your Tsöpa Gergen, which means your debating master. And there'll be a separate monk who teaches you how to debate. And all the forms, you know, there's all these crazy forms, and you have to practice for years to get all the forms right and everything. But then there's your Khamsin Gyergen, which is your house master. And he's the one that you probably live in the same room with him. You eat from the same bowl. You drink from the same glass. And he teaches you your private practices and your private prayers. And so in the monastery, this would be a separate person teaching you privately, something like that. And you start very young, and you keep that practice through your whole life. So it doesn't matter you become a geshe or not, you succeed in your debating or not, you know, you end up as a cook or not. Everybody in the monastery is doing a daily practice. And that daily practice is from the oral tradition of the person that you're around all the time and the person you're serving. So I'm just going to go through a normal daily routine. And I think it's good for you if you go through it a few times. So we'll do it once tonight, and then we'll do it each of the Mondays for, I don't know, 5 or 6 weeks, something like that. And then that's something you can use for your daily practice. This is not the only thing you do for your daily practice, but this is, I think, the most important part for your daily practice. So we'll go through that. First you wake up, okay? It's important to, you know, lamas will always say, go wash your face, get fresh, freshen up, make your bed, although I never do. You know, clean up your room slightly. Especially your meditation area. Brush your teeth, okay? I mean, your mouth when you wake. I'm being very blunt, okay? And that's daily practice. If your mouth doesn't taste good, it's hard to meditate, okay? So brush your teeth. Clear your nose. And frankly, in the monastery, when they teach you meditation, they take you in a room and they put you in front of a sink and they tell you, just blow, you know, and you go, you know, like that. And it's very important to get all the stuff out of your nose. It seems like a silly thing, but I'm telling you the oral tradition, and it's important. Your nose has to be clear. When you breathe in meditation, it's through your nose. You shouldn't breathe through your mouth. If you have a really bad cold or something, it's okay to breathe through your mouth. I was meditating in some mountains, and my nose was bleeding all the time, and I had to breathe through my mouth or something like that. That's okay, but normally you breathe through your nose, so you should clear out your nose. Nose should be totally clear. Turn on the faucet, blow it all in, you know, wash your hands, blow some more. Don't pop your eardrums or anything. But just gently get everything out that you can from your nose. It's very important, okay? It's very important to dress properly for meditation. You know, you should, it should be loose, especially around your waist. And I find personally that if I get too warm, I get sleepy. So I like to be a little cold when I meditate. I like to be, if I have a sweater on, I usually take it off or something like that. So it's important to me. It's important that your temperature be right. If it's too cold, you can get sick. Okay. If it's too warm, you get sleepy. So you have to find the right combination. This room is a little too warm right now. Okay, it's not good for meditation. For me, each person has a different body, right? Then you go into your meditation place, make sure it's clean, should be neat. You should have an altar. And I'm not going to get into the altar today, okay? We'll talk about that in the coming weeks, because I want to get straight to some real practice. You arrange your altar properly, you put out some kind of offerings properly, and I'll teach you how to do that. The point of offerings is that, and the point of an altar, we don't believe the Buddha is some piece of paper with colors on, painted on it, you know. We don't believe that the Buddha is going to come here and drink this water or anything like that. Buddhas experience total bliss from every object in the universe. Okay, they're experiencing total bliss from your nose and from your fingernail and from your right ear and from your left ear, you know. If they are aware of all objects in the universe, and all objects in the universe give them total bliss, so they could care less whether you put out bowls of water or not. You know, they are experiencing bliss from the water that's in the faucet. They're experiencing bliss from the bowls if they're under the altar. But putting them out is making a statement from your side that I believe that there are enlightened beings, and I want you to know that I believe, and I'm setting out these bowls as an offering to you. I would like you to be here when I do my practice. Okay, and so you have to get in the mood that you're inviting them. If you think about them, then they come. If you ask them to come in your mind, then they come. Can you see them? No. Do they exist? Yes. Can you prove their existence? Yes. It takes a while. Can you see them directly? Later. You will be able to. And it's important to believe that they're in the room. They are in the room. If they aren't in the room, then they don't exist, and there's no reason to be a Buddhist, actually. Okay? Seriously. The quality of a Buddha is that when you think that you would like them to meditate with you, they come. And they're there during the time that you meditate. If you think they can't do that, then there's no such thing as a Buddha, and there's not much reason to meditate. Okay? So they can come. You can't see them now. But it's important to invite them in your mind. Okay, then you do your three prostrations, which we already did. Prostration we'll talk about later, but I remember when I first got to India and I walked in a class and I was feeling very much strange. You know, I didn't know what was going on. And for all I knew, everybody had been there for 10 years or something. You know, like you walk into a room and you don't know if the other guy was here for one day or 10 years. And I thought, I looked at them all and I said, oh, they're probably all very advanced meditators and I'm just this new schmuck who just walked in here, you know. And I felt really stupid, like I didn't know what anybody was doing, you know. And then they all got up and there's always like two or three people that are looking at you like you did that wrong and you don't know what you did yet, you know. And I remember everybody getting down on the ground and prostrating, and I felt very uncomfortable with it, you know. I felt like it didn't feel good to me. It felt like something evil almost, or something weird. And I didn't understand it for a long time. And then after a while I did it, but I didn't believe in it, you know. But then there comes a time, if you ever did meet one of those enlightened beings, you know, like you're inviting them all the time, but you never see them. If one day you saw them, really saw them, like if you were meditating and you really saw one of them, you would stand up and get down on the ground on your stomach. Because it'd be so, like if Jesus walked in the room right now and you knew it was him, the natural reaction would be to get down on the ground, flat on the ground. And you don't know until it happens, okay? But it is the natural reaction. There's Charlton Heston in the Ten Commandments, he does that. You know, he meets the burning bush and he gets down on his face. And that is the real reaction. When you meet one of those beings, the day that you meet one of them, you'll get down on your face and then it won't seem strange to you anymore. So in the meantime, do it out of as an act of faith, okay? Prostrate 3 times, and then you get into your meditation position. And I'm just covering main points. We'll cover it over 6 weeks' time, but I just want to give you enough that you can start tomorrow, okay? Important to have a nice cushion. The back is supposed to be higher than the front. A lot of it depends on your own body. Like, some people don't have any butt at all, like me. Some people have a big butt, like some other people I know. And it depends on your own butt, okay? But, like, for me, I need a lot in the back. It keeps your back up straight. So the back should be higher than the front. A lot of people make a mistake that they put their ankles down on the floor. You should have a lot of cushion under your ankles. Okay, that's where it starts to hurt first, especially if you have bony ankles like mine. It starts to hurt at that bone in the ankle where the ankle's on the floor. So it's not that your rear end is hurting, and it's not even that your knees are hurting necessarily, but... Most people don't realize that when the blood stops or when your foot falls asleep, it's because the bone is on the floor. So put a nice, you know, if you can put like a half inch padding under your feet where they touch the floor, it's very good. I don't think, for me, a carpet's not enough. Like even one of these Tibetan carpets is not enough for me. My leg starts to fall asleep. If you want to do a full lotus, which I can't, or I can do it, but it starts to hurt so bad, I start to think about the pain rather than the meditation. You would put your left leg up first on your right thigh, and then your right leg up on your left thigh. Okay, that's the ideal place. And then your feet are like that, and there's a nice place to put your hands. Okay, if you don't, if you can't do a full lotus comfortably, then don't worry about it. Just do a half lotus, and that's where you would put your left leg over your right instep of your foot. Okay, like that. Right. And that's just like a half lotus, and that's comfortable. You can do that. Shouldn't wear tight pants. Everything should be loose, and shouldn't be too warm.
Okay, I personally like to.
If you can't. If you can't, do a full lotus, then your hands are going to be too far down. See what I mean? If you're doing a full lotus, your feet are up high on your thighs, and they're holding up your hands. And then when you put your thumbs together, it's in front of your navel. Okay, your thumbs are in front of your belly button. But if you're doing a half lotus, which is what I do all the time, it's about 2 inches farther down. So you need something to roll up. I use my shirt, okay, personally. So excuse me. And that, for me, it makes me cool. It makes me cold. And then I don't get sleepy. So you should have like a piece of sweater or a piece of a scarf or something, but something to roll up. And it brings your hands up. You put it on top of your leg, and it brings your hands up to your, so that your thumbs are in front of your navel, Okay, and that's the way it's supposed to be. By the way, all these things are very important later. When you get to advanced meditation techniques, which you must do sooner or later, there's very important things about posture, very important things about your body, how you hold your body. And so it's important to start the right way. It affects you years from now when you get into deeper kinds of... There are many, many levels of meditation practice, and you should be doing it right from the first day. And then when you get to those higher levels, some of which are secret, you'll be ready. Okay. So then your left hand should go down first, then your right hand on top of that, and then join your thumbs. That used to drive me crazy, and they said, join your thumbs, and I'm like concentrating on my thumbs, and I can't think, you know. So if it's more comfortable, put them down like that. It's okay. If you can, put them like that. I used to find that they fell down all the time. So I've learned this trick that if you turn your elbows out a little bit, then it's kind of nicer. Then the thumbs can stay up a little bit. And the thumbs, again, should be, if you press in, it would hit your belly button, okay? So if your lap is too far down, then roll something up and put it in your lap, and it keeps you like this. It's also good if you can keep your arms a little bit away from your body, because heat builds up. If you sit like that, there's heat that builds up here under your arms, and it'll make you sleepy. There are two great enemies to meditation. One is sleepiness, and one is being distracted, thinking about a lot of other things. Right? Those are the two extremes. The word in Tibetan for meditation is nyomjuk, which means equilibrium, which means to stay halfway between sleepiness and thinking about a lot of other stuff. And it's very difficult to stay in between those. You're like, you know how you drive a car when you're first learning how to drive? And you tend to go that way too far, and the teacher says, whoa, and you go that way, and you go too far. And then when you see an experienced driver, they're moving the wheel like that all the time. It's a constant correction. Even for a person who's been meditating for 10 or 20 years, you're constantly correcting. You know, it's not like static. It's like all through the meditation, you're like left, right, left, right, left, left, you know, right, right. And, you know, sleepy, sleepy, sleepy. Oh, let's go back. Oh, thinking about work. Go back, sleepy. And it's like that. That's the extremes to avoid. Which means, by the way, if you don't get enough sleep, you can forget meditating. Impossible. You know, if you've tried, you know. Try meditating after 10 o'clock at night or something, you know. Or try meditating after a big meal, which some of you I heard did at Hasa restaurant. No. Okay. I heard a rumor like that. You gotta take care of your body. Okay. Is the body a goal? No. Do you want to have a nice, beautiful body so you can be a good Buddhist? No. It's going to be worm food, right? Is it important to keep it in good condition? Yes. Is it important to give it enough food and enough sleep? It's very important. Okay. You have to use it to get to the other side, and then you can leave it behind. You know, and you will leave it behind, especially if you do advanced practices. You'll actually change bodies, but that's another story. Okay. But right now you need it and take good care of it. You can't meditate if you're sleepy, if you didn't get enough sleep. So you have to take care of yourself that way. So we'll just start. We'll start with a real meditation. And I think it's very important to have a clock, especially if you're meditating in the morning. I think most people, it's better to meditate in the morning because you're fresh. It's generally quieter in the morning. Do you have to get up at 3 o'clock and like that? No, because you have to get enough sleep. Get 6-7 hours of sleep, or whatever you need. If you need 9, get 9. If you need 5, get 5. But generally, pick a time in the morning and then use a clock. Buy yourself one of these clocks. Every meditator should have a clock and their cushion that they carry around, you know. You should have one that you're always sitting on the same cushion, you're always using the same clock. It should be a clock that doesn't tick, okay? The one downstairs right under us ticks. It drives me crazy, okay? Don't get one that ticks. The big enemy of meditation is sound. And, you know, in New York City, you're pretty much not much you can do about it. You can experiment with different kinds of earplugs. You can try to meditate before the traffic starts too heavy. You can try to find a room in your house that is not too loud, okay? But those are things you have to do. Try to avoid sounds. It's very important because it's something that's going to ruin your meditation very easily. And then set the clock so you don't have to think about it anymore, okay? Now I don't have to think about getting up for work. It will go off, and I don't have to think about it anymore. So that's one more thing I don't have to think about. A meditator's career is determined by figuring out how many things you can get rid of in your mind that you don't have to think about. You see, every more commitment you have, every possession you have adds one more, takes up a few more brain cells to remember what you're doing with it. You know, every credit card you add, no, seriously, it's you know, 3,000 more brain cells that you have to commit to that. You have to remember that you have it. You have to remember the bill, you know. So the idea is to try to strip all those out. And to actually, the fewer possessions you can have, the better. Okay, stuff like that. It just fills up your brain space. Okay. Okay, we'll actually do a meditation. We're gonna do a half hour, which is easy. Okay. And then we'll take a break, and then we'll do about 20 minutes more or something. This is a real daily practice. In fact, the reason I agreed to do this class was that I could just do my own practice. And seriously, okay? So I'm just going to go through my own daily practice, all right? And I hope it helps you like that. Okay, left hand down first, right hand down. You can close your eyes if you want. You can leave them open if you want. It doesn't matter. If you find yourself getting sleepy, crack them open a little bit. I'm not going to go through everything in detail, but I'm just going to go ahead and do a daily practice, and each week we'll add a few more things, okay? First thing, by the way, sit up straight, okay? Head should be not too up like that, not like that, not like that. I have one student who ends up like that when they meditate. Don't do that, okay? It should just be totally comfortable. Good meditation, good concentration is very similar to the attention quality, the quality of attention you have at a very good movie. Okay? Seriously. Very good meditative concentration should be very similar to the bright-eyed, bushy-tailed feeling you have at a very good movie when you're on the edge of your seat, you know, and you're looking. And that's actually a meditative state. That's single-pointed concentration on a movie. You just have to try to get it when you're in meditation. Okay? It's nothing like weird, okay? It's just good attention. Okay, here we go. Start with your breath, watching your breath. The out breath is the, you're going to count to 10 breaths. The out breath counts as the first half, and the in breath counts as the second half. So when you count to one, you're going to go, one, okay, in your nose, with your nose, all right? So it's not like American way where it's one breath. It's out and then in counts as one breath, okay? Do that nice, do it loosely. What does it mean to watch your breath? You can't see the air, right? And your eyes are closed anyway. It means feel the air hitting the nostrils. Feel the air as it hits these two rings here. And just pretend you're standing there at the door and you're watching the air go in and out. And it's mostly tactile. You feel the cool air coming in and the warm air going out. And all you're doing is watching this two little rings here. Okay, we'll count to 10 three times. Okay, don't try to control your breath, and in meditation, don't ever try to force anything. It won't work, and you'll hurt yourself. Okay, just natural, breathe in and out 10 times. Try to get your mind on your breath. The function of this practice is to take your mind off your office, off your daily life. Is it a goal in itself? No, it won't get you enlightened to watch your breath. Next step is taking refuge. These are the warm-ups, okay? You have to go through them to have a good meditation. Taking refuge in this case means mainly thinking about your goal. And you can take refuge in the Buddha, meaning think about what it's going to be like when you get enlightened. And I think one of the sweetest things, you can take refuge in many, many aspects of the Buddha and the Dharma and the Sangha, but choose something specific. Don't make it vague. Choose some specific goal you have in mind with your own practice. And in this case, I think we could take the Buddha. Think about the Buddha's ability to read people's minds, to see their future, and to do just the right thing for them. So think about what it would be like if you could read people's minds, if you could see their future, and if you really cared for them and you could do the right things for them. So think about that quality of a Buddha. Go for refuge to that quality. Think about yourself in the future having that quality. You can read people's minds. You can see their futures. And you love them so much, you will do the right thing for them. Do each step here 10 breaths, like in the background, count 10 breaths, and then move on. It's very important that your meditation move on. It shouldn't get hung up or stuck on a single thought. So after 10 breaths, whether you've had a good refuge or not, whether you've had a good concentration or not, then move on. Next step is bodhicitta, which is practicing compassion. And make it specific again. Don't think about love for all beings. It doesn't mean much to you right now. Think about caring for some specific person who is suffering mentally or physically. So now, for this step, think of someone else who is suffering physically or mentally. I would say depression. Think of somebody who has depression, someone that you know. And think about what it would be like if you were a Buddha, you could help them because you could read their mind, you could see their future, you could see what would help them. So think of someone you know who's having a problem with depression right now and think about bodhicitta for them, love for them. Next step is to invite your Lama or any other holy being to come in the room, and then imagine that they're meditating with you, sitting in front of you, and ask them if they would come. It's very important to visualize a pure being, totally pure. Like if your lama is like not quite pure in your eyes, then clean them up. You make them handsome or pretty, make them healthy, make them compassionate, make them shining with light, put them in beautiful clothing. Make them, invite a perfect holy being to come and sit with you. You're not inviting a tanka. You're not inviting a painting or a statue. You're inviting a person. They have, they're breathing, their body is warm, their body is fragrant. You can feel the brush of their hair, their clothes on you. Imagine all of those things. Visualize a being and don't visualize a painting or a statue. Next step is think very carefully what they've done for you in your life, even something small, but make it specific. Don't be vague. Never be vague in these meditations. Think of something specific you've learned from them, something you've gained from them, something spiritual you've achieved because of them, and bow down to them. If you feel comfortable, then in your mind do a prostration. The scriptures also say you can get down on your right knee and bow in front of them. So imagine either one, but don't do it meaninglessly. Do it because you are grateful for something they gave you. If you can't think of anything they gave you, your practice is lousy. Make them an offering. It's just like if you had a girlfriend and or a boyfriend and you wanted to give them something really, really nice because you love them. Think like that, you know, you love your lama or this being and think of some beautiful thing you can give them. It's totally up to your imagination. Very typically, there's a very holy offering called the Cloud of Samatabhadra where you imagine the whole sky filled with flowers and you offer that. So if you like, do that. But any sweet thing you can visualize. Next step is very important. Think of something negative you do today, or something negative you said, and especially something negative you thought. And again, don't be vague. Be very, very specific. Think of something very specific that you did today or said today that was negative. It's a bad karma. It's going to bring you some bad consequences. Be very specific. Play it back like a videotape or a tape recorder. Try to get the exact words. Try to see exactly where you were standing. What were the words that went through your mind? If you can really get good at this, and if you can play back a bad thought when you're in a good mood, you can see how ridiculous they are. Okay, so try to search your day and try to come up with something negative that you did and play it back 2 or 3 times. Something funny happens to me here. It's like I got angry at somebody and I play it back, I get angry again. So, so don't do that, okay? You're supposed to be regretting the bad karma. In Buddhism, you're supposed to give equal airtime to being happy about the good things you did. So now think very, very specifically about something good that you did today, some good thought you had, something you did for someone else, some pure thought that came in your mind. And do this very seriously. Be very, very specific. Don't be vague. You know, there's a prayer that you can recite out loud. There's many of them that covers these warm-up steps. And then people just recite it, and then they try to meditate, and they don't even think about the meaning of it. And they just recite it one verse real quick, and then they go on to the next one, and they don't even have time to think about. Stop and think clearly about some good thing you did today. You should like start to smile or something, you know, like you should be proud of yourself and glad that you're improving. So find something you did today, even if it's small. It doesn't have to be like saving somebody's life, you know. It could be you just gave someone a cup of tea, or you opened a door for somebody, or it can be something small, but it should be specific. Don't be vague. Something about yourself that you are proud of that you did today. Even if it's a small thing. And play it back like a videotape a couple times. There's two more steps, and then we're done with the warm-up, okay? In the next step, mentally, you ask all the teachers in the world to teach you. You ask the formal teachers, like people who are teaching classes, you ask them in your mind to teach you. And you also ask, there's a lot of secret Buddhas around in the world. We don't always know who they are. I think when we get enlightened, we'll be very much surprised who some of them were. But they're all around the place. They're trying to help you. There's ones that you can see, ones that you can't see. And ask them to teach you throughout this day, throughout your day tomorrow. If you're meditating in the morning, you're asking to be taught. Some of the lessons will be negative, like maybe the best thing a lama can do for you sometimes is to get you angry or to get you jealous or to do something negative to you. So now in the morning you're asking for that kind of teaching if you need it. If someone can get you jealous, then you still have to work on your jealousy. So they're being kind to get you jealous. And they're your teacher. And they teach you a lot more sometimes than in all the classes you had for a month. So in the morning you're requesting it, so you can't be upset when it comes in the afternoon, okay? Ask for teaching. You can't learn anything without a teacher. Even things like typing or cooking, things like that. It goes so much easier if you have a really good teacher. Or something like dancing. The last warm-up, and then we'll take a break, is to ask those teachers to stay near to you. Enlightened beings, angels, good influences in your life, you know, friends you have who are good friends, sincere friends, spiritual friends, honest people, clean people. Ask all of these influences to stay near you. Ask the Buddhas to stay close to you. Ask your lamas to stay close to you. Can they stay close to you if you're being bad? No. Because you're creating the karma that will drive them away from you. So, is it up to them whether they're close to you? No, it's up to you. So what's the use of asking them to stay close? Is the good karma of asking them to stay close helps them stay close? So really, sincerely ask them to stay close, and it helps them to stay close. Okay, take a break. You can stretch. It's good to take a 3-4 minute break. You can't really meditate more than about half an hour, okay? I mean, you can sit there for 2 hours, but you'll just be fuzzing out, you know? So, admit it, take a little stretch, you know. Make sure you're loose. Generally, in our tradition, they say it's not useful unless it's extremely hot or something to take food or drink while you're meditating. Okay. It is good in the morning. You can take a little bit of water or some tea or juice before you start your practice, but not good to eat breakfast before you practice. If your nose starts doing something, don't be shy. Just blow it. Get it out. Okay. If you have to pick it, pick it. Okay. But don't be shy. You know, it has to be clear. Those two passageways have to be clear. Okay. If it starts dripping, let it drip. Don't move. Okay. See what I mean? Very important not to move while you're meditating. It's not such a big deal. You'll survive. It's not like you're going to cripple yourself for life in 20 minutes, okay? If it's too hot, just ignore it. If it's too cool, just ignore it. If your stomach starts grumbling, ignore it. Now you get to the actual meditation. We're going to do a meditation which is very, very, very important. You can do it from the very first day you ever start, and probably the day you get enlightened, you'll probably still be doing it. Okay? It's called Tonglen. Tong means, Len means taking on other people's suffering, removing other people's suffering, and Tong means giving them happiness. This is a very important meditation from the beginning up to the end of your Buddhist career. It is taught as a way to develop compassion. I mean, everybody would like to be compassionate, you know. I think it upsets you or me that we can't be more compassionate. There's a human need to be compassionate. You know, you would like to feel more compassionate, you know. You'd like to be one of those people that has this huge capacity for love, you know, and then you feel sort of bad or guilty sometimes that you can't or you don't have it. This is a method that if you just keep doing it every day, you'll get more compassionate and you'll feel like fantastic. And by the way, you'll get enlightened, okay? Also, it links a breathing practice with a compassion practice. So this particular kind of breathing practice becomes very important in the highest teachings of Buddhism. So later on, you'll need these practices to practice very special teachings of Buddhism. So this is a case where, as a beginner, at the very beginning stage, you get to use a practice which is going to help you way down the road, just before you get enlightened. Okay, so it's very important that at the same moment you're doing a compassion practice and a breathing practice. Okay, so I'll take you through that. We're going to stop promptly at 8:30, and I have a big date at an Indian restaurant. I hope I survive. But it's not good to go too long when you meditate. It's good to move. The meditation should move, and then you should reach the end, and you should get to work on time. Okay, and that's very useful. People tend to get bogged down in their daily practice, and then they don't get anywhere, and then the time is up, and they have to jump up and run off to work. You know, we don't want to do that. Okay, all right, back into the position. Put your mind in neutral. The classic method is to count some breaths. Okay, we'll count 10 breaths to put the mind back in neutral. This meditation begins by focusing on yourself. If you're doing it in the morning, focus on yourself throughout the day. Since we're doing it in the evening, we're going to be focusing on ourselves tomorrow. So think about where you're going to be tomorrow and try to anticipate mentally what will be your worst moment tomorrow, physically, socially, you know, occupationally. Mentally, it doesn't matter. Pick what you can guess will be the worst moment of your life tomorrow. For example, I could think that I might have jealousy if I see a certain person, or I might have anger if my boss yells at me, or something like that. I might have a fight with someone. My back might start to hurt again the way it hurts, or something like that. Try to clearly visualize a place, a time of day, and you're sitting there and you're having some very great mental or physical pain, something that's very likely to happen tomorrow. Now visualize that pain as a black, small black ball like the size of a marble in your chest tomorrow, okay? The person tomorrow, you tomorrow, picture them sitting down, standing up, doesn't matter, laying down, whatever. But all of that pain seeps out of their body or their mind, and it concentrates as a black sphere, a little tiny black ball like the size of a marble or a pea at their in their chest, you know, like in their where their heart would be. And it's like really ugly, sticky tar, like tar, something very ugly, pure black, suffering or pain. It's all concentrated in one small area, like a tumor. Each step should be timed on your breath, 10 breaths, and then you must move on. Don't force the breath, don't try to hold the breath, don't do anything, just let it go naturally. Next step, really, really think about removing that pain from that person who's you tomorrow. Like normally we're so short-sighted we don't even think about this kind of thing. But imagine yourself tomorrow and really, really imagine what it would be like if you could take that suffering away from them right now. Now on your in-breath, take 10 breaths. On each in-breath, visualize or imagine that that ball, that tumor comes up. You're like drawing it towards you. You decided you want to take it away from them. By the way, you're not going to take on their pain per se. You know, don't worry about it. It's not like you're taking that evil thing into yourself. You're going to draw it towards you. And when it gets about an inch away from your body, you're going to stop it in space and just hold it in space. So with 10 breaths, on each in-breath, imagine that you're sitting fairly close to them and it starts to dislodge from their chest and you're drawing it up their throat, up out of their nose. It's coming up out of their nostril, and then it's coming towards you, and then stop it in space about an inch in front of your face, in front of your nose, because you're going to breathe it in, but very quickly, but not now. So don't let it touch you yet, okay? So with a real desire to remove that pain from them and imagining how good they would feel if they didn't have that pain, then suck it towards you in 10 breaths. Now concentrate on your own heart, your present person's heart. Tonight, look inside your chest. See a small red flame. And in the scriptures, it says this flame is your selfishness. There's a state of mind called grasping to self-existence. It's not what we're talking about tonight. Don't worry about that. Tonight we're talking about plain old selfishness, where you had a chance to help somebody, you didn't. Somebody needed something, you didn't do anything. There was only enough of something for one person, you took it. You got on the bus first, you pushed in front of other people. Anything selfish is that red flame at your heart. Again, don't ever let your daily practice become vague and platitudes and some kind of mouthing some words that you're not even thinking about. Very specifically, try to remember some event in this day, today, where you were selfish. It's much more powerful to think clearly about 1 2-minute period when you were selfish with a cup of tea than it is to try to some vague cosmic selfishness, okay? Be very specific and think about a case where you were actually selfish today, and then represent that as a red flame at your heart. It's about an inch high. It doesn't have to be like killing somebody. It could be just eating the last of the Cheerios or something. Hold the flame in your vision. Hold the black ball outside your face. And we're going to take one slow, deep in-breath when I say go, okay? And the black ball is going to come into your nose, down your throat. And you have to keep your concentration on it as it approaches the flame. It's going to come in contact with the flame. And then it's very important to imagine a very strong white burst of light, and the flame will go out and disappear, and the black ball will be vaporized, and there won't be anything left but a little wisp of smoke. And then with your mind's eye, follow that wisp of smoke until it just goes and vanishes into nothing, okay? So one deep breath in, and then you're going to touch the red flame. There's going to be a burst of really beautiful white light. And then there's just going to be this, like, it's going to be like a photo flash. And then the smoke is going to be there. And then the smoke, like cigarette smoke in the wind, it's just going to fade away. And all of that suffering of that person is gone. And they feel the white light. And you feel the happiness of giving them that. And then focus on the white light, like it's going to spread through your chest, and it's just going to be something beautiful and warm and some kind of holiness in your own heart. So when I say go, take your breath, and then just enjoy the light, okay? And the light is touching other people, it's lighting up other people, and it's something beautiful that you've done, even just in your imagination, because that's where everything starts, is in your imagination. Okay, go. Okay, that's really nice. Then, actually, I should sit and enjoy it for a while, but I have to get to the Indian restaurant, so. It's important to dedicate the goodness of your daily practice. You made a really good karma. By the way, you can relax now, okay? It's important, the final thing is to dedicate it. Take a moment. It's considered bad luck or inauspicious to leave your lama. Remember you invited your lama there? It's considered bad luck to just jump up and leave him there stranded. You know? So he or she. So you sincerely ask them to come and stay with you in your heart, and they start to come up off the ground, and they come to the top of your head, and when they get there, they're about 3 inches high, and then they start to shrink more, and they melt down into the top of your head, and they come straight down along your spine into your heart, and imagine a little chamber there, and it's full of this nice, beautiful golden light, and there's a huge flower there, and they're sitting on the flower. Do that now, okay? It's very important to think that they're very, very happy, very pleased. You just spent one of the best hours of your life, and they're very, very happy. And they, you know, like in your mind, you're asking, please, can you hang out in my heart the whole day today? And they're like, oh, I was already intending to, you know? And, you know, they're very happy to be there, and they know what you want, and they're very pleased with you. So imagine that. When you have a bad moment at work or something, you can go run away into your heart and sit with them for a while. Then you dedicate it, you'd collected a lot of good karma, you should dedicate it to something important. And in this case, remember we started out, we were thinking about Buddhas who can read people's minds and know their future, and they know the best way to help them. So dedicate it to the goal that you could become like that. Take this virtue, you know, wrap it up and ship it, you know, like FedEx, to your future enlightenment, okay? Purposely and consciously dedicate it to the ability to read people's minds and help them because you can see their future. Then there's something you can recite in Tibetan, and maybe later we'll do it in English. For example, Ganden Hagyama, or there are other prayers you can recite. They describe each step of this practice that we talked about tonight. And it's very, very good if you can learn them. And they're very easy to recite. It only takes a few minutes to recite it. And you should learn them. We won't get into that tonight, but later you should learn them. It's very good to be able to recite the verse and then to stop and think about it. And that's ideal if you can do it that way. So we'll do the verse for dedication alone. And then see you next week, okay?
Sanam yeshe sozoshin, sanam yeshe lechoe, tambah.